As we learned when we watched William Jefferson Clinton being interrogated for the grand jury, whoever is asking the questions is in control. The investigators got very upset at Mr. Clinton because he would not answer questions that he did not fully understand. It's very, very important to understand the question before you answer, or you might inadvertently lie. You may want to know the definitions of the words that you hear in a question that you're asked. As we saw in the William Jefferson Clinton grand jury interrogation, one of the issues that was raised was the word is, and the media made a very, very big deal about Mr. Clinton wanting to know which definition of is was being used for that particular question. Well, Black's Law Dictionary, one of the primary dictionaries used by the legal profession and the courts in this country, has 18 different and distinct definitions for the word is. I, for one, would probably want to know which definition is being applied in that question before I answer it so that I don't inadvertently lie. Mr. Clinton trained us very, very well in that 4 hours and 30 seconds of grand jury interrogation, teaching us how important it is to understand the question before you answer, and also making absolutely certain that if there's any room for misunderstanding, that you qualify your answer with, if I understand your question correctly, my answer is. That way you can never commit perjury. Those of you wondering whether or not Mr. Clinton ever committed perjury, I can absolutely assure you that he did not. He always qualified his answer after getting as many definitions as he could. In summary, due process as guaranteed by the Constitution is outlined in the Administrative Procedures Act. What it requires is that you first go to the party that you think you have a dispute with and tell them, I think I have a dispute with you, and here's the procedures I would like to use to resolve that dispute. Here's my claims, respond in so many days, or it will be deemed that you agree with me. Deemed means it's understood. They then have the opportunity to respond. The most important principle here is that they have notice that you have a claim, and they have the opportunity to respond. If they do not like the procedure you set forth, if they don't like the forum you set forth, which is the place or the office that you are setting forth as a dispute resolution center, they have the right to object to that if they can identify legal grounds and say, no, let's use a different procedure or a different administrative reviewer. They can waive any other due process rights except the notice and opportunity to respond. If they do not object or controvert or disagree with what you say, you have won, even if they don't say anything. You have to send a special claim if you're going to ask for money damages under the Tort Claims Act. You have to send that to the appropriate risk management agency for that particular corporate or governmental body. In a nutshell, due process is notice and opportunity to respond. And if the opportunity to respond is waived, you have won. Well, now that we know some law and a little bit of procedure, how do we actually use this in everyday life? And what does it mean to us, and what does it mean to those of us who understand that we are the master and government is our servant? How do we get our servants to understand what that relationship is? You'll need to look this up for your state. In Washington, at RCW 4217-010, they have the Declaration of Policy for the state. And here's exactly what it says. It is hereby declared by the sovereign people to be the public policy of the state of Washington. And I'm not going to get all of them, but there's just some excerpts here that will be very critical to our everyday lives. It is the public policy of the state of Washington that the people have the right to expect from their elected representatives at all levels of government the utmost of integrity, honesty, and fairness in their dealings. That's something that we might want to put on bumper stickers, or maybe even require them to put on the visors of every public car, reminding our employees who's in charge and what their responsibilities are. It is the public policy of the state of Washington that public confidence in government at all levels is essential and must be promoted by all possible means. Well, when policemen are out beating people to a bloody pulp, Does that give us public confidence in government? How about like in New York, where those policemen shot an unarmed man 47 times? Does that give us public confidence in government? Maybe we need to train our employees what it is we mean by our public policy for them. It's a public policy of the state of Washington that public confidence in government at all levels can best be sustained by assuring the people of the impartiality and honesty of the officials in all public transactions and decisions. How much do we see them avoiding that one? And that mindful of the right of individuals to privacy and the desirability of the efficient administration of government, full access to information concerning the conduct of government on every level must be assured as a fundamental and necessary precondition to the sound governance of a free society. After stating our declaration of policy, we have also added what is known as a statement of legislative intent. What a statement of legislative intent in legislation does is it says if there's any potential for misunderstanding, this is how it's to be construed. This is how you're to interpret this and apply it on a situation-by-situation basis that it may not look like it applies directly to. And here's what we tell our officials in Washington. The provisions of this chapter shall be liberally construed to promote complete disclosure of all information respecting the financing of political campaigns and lobbying, the financial affairs of elected officials and candidates, and full access to public records so as to assure continuing public confidence of fairness of elections and governmental processes, and so as to assure the public interest will be fully protected. That public interest is you and I, folks, and this is the law that tells them they always have to act in our best interest, and we have the right to look at their records and see whether or not that's what they've done. Well, what happens when we do look at those records and we find out that they haven't been acting in our best interest? Any of you who have tried to sue public officials will generally find that they always come back and say, "Oh, we're officials, we have immunity, you can't sue us." The law is only as good as the people's ability to enforce it. Remember what the Founding Fathers said, "Know the law and be well disposed to use it." Again, the law doesn't prevent crime or wrongdoing, only identifies it and provides the procedure for a remedy. Well, generally we look to the courts to help us understand how to best prosecute our rights and hold officials accountable. They give some great guidelines in what are known as court decisions, precedent, and also case law. This is where the courts have heard cases and said, in this circumstance, this is how the law must be applied. One of these cases that we are very, very familiar with is Miranda versus Arizona. We've nearly all heard about Miranda rights. You have the right to remain silent, you have the right to an attorney, and on and on. However, a less known part of that case was when the Supreme Court was setting the foundation on how they were going to apply it in that particular case. And here's what they said in no uncertain terms. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Wow. It doesn't matter what the legislature or the rulemakers say, the Supreme Court has said that the Constitution must rule supreme, and where legislation or rulemaking is contrary to the Constitution, the rulemaking and legislation must give way, and the Constitution must rule supreme.